Hi, welcome to Speaking of Sex with the Pleasure Mechanics. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics, and in this podcast, we offer our expert sex advice to answer your questions, provide helpful resources, and help you along the path to sexual bliss. How's that for a goal? You can find a complete podcast archive and much, much more over at pleasuremechanics.com. Go and check it out and use our handy-dandy sex index to find the topics that most interest you. On this podcast, we are going to be talking about male sexuality and how it's been affected by our legacy of sex-negative culture and how we can support men in becoming more sexually fulfilled and give them the opportunity for more sexual happiness. Because we spend a lot of time as a culture talking about female sexuality and how to recover female sexuality from our sex-negative past. But what about the guys? How have they been affected, and what does that look like in the lives of everyday men? And this podcast episode is partly in preparation for an upcoming interview that we will be doing. And at the end of the episode, we want to invite you to send in your questions for an interview with a urologist to the stars. He's one of the leading urologists and sexual health advocates for men, and we will be doing an interview with him soon, and we want to know what's on your mind. So let's dive in. Charlotte, my dear, what are some of the big areas men's sexuality has been affected, and how do we start thinking about this?
I think first of all is understanding that men's sexuality has been affected by this culture of sexual repression and shame.
Right.
We understand that it's affected women's sexuality, and we think about men historically having been more of the oppressor, but we do need to understand that the oppressor is also oppressed.
Yes.
So men have been hurt by this dynamic of women being quiet and just being fucked for their men's pleasure. They can take it whenever they want. It doesn't really work. It doesn't work for men either. This dynamic hurts everyone. And so...
Right. So sexuality as a whole has been really repressed and vilified, and sexuality was made to be a sin, and any expression outside of reproductive intercourse was a mortal sin that would send you straight to hell. And I think in today's modern times, especially for those of us that aren't super religious, we forget how intertwined the church was with people's everyday lives. For most of Western culture, for the past several hundred years, the church was the institution that ruled our lives. And the church's edicts, especially around sexuality, were our primary source of morality and rules that dictated people's behaviors. And if you were perceived, not even proven, to be a whore or to have sexuality outside of the marital bed, you could be run out of town, which in those days meant your life was destroyed. You lost your community and your livelihood and everything. Or you could be burned at the stake. Like, this was a real thing, this idea of rounding up people who were sexual sinners and executing them publicly in order to make a point. This was a very real thing that happened throughout Europe and into the Americas. And this is our Western sexual legacy. And so this idea that we've all been repressed, it's not just this like, oh, we've been repressed and poor us. It was the control, the primary means of social control was creating an idea that sex was sinful and we could control people through their sexuality. And I could get into that. You know, I love this stuff and really am seeking as much as possible to understand how this legacy affects us today. Like, this is my primary source of study. But this idea that it's not just that, like, men could fuck women when they wanted and men were more sexually free and men were the oppressors. This affected all of us and right into the past couple generations. There were asylums where people were sent away for being too sexual. And this is just our very recent cultural legacy, and we're just kind of crawling out of this ditch, right? We're just scraping out of this history and into this idea that sexuality is a positive, good thing. Like, this is just in the past 50, 60 years. And so we cannot underestimate how this legacy has affected all of us.
Or why people struggle with sex. Like, right. When it is this fresh, we cannot underestimate how that affects our psychology and our behavior and our choices.
Yeah, we just got an email from a woman who, for her 16th birthday, she was raised in a religious household, and they found out that she had had sex before marriage. And on the day of her birthday, her father was abusing her and saying, like, whores don't deserve birthday parties, you're a worthless slut. And, like, this kind of dialogue still happens in households right now.
Yeah. I mean, and let alone what's happening in other countries right now. Right. So we're still
getting thrown off the buildings for being too sexual and being stoned alive. This is happening in this moment. And so how do we start creating a sex positive culture that we can live in? How do we start living into this idea that sexuality is a positive, pleasurable source of energy and vitality and connection and intimacy and kinship, right? Like, this is what this podcast is all about. This is what we've dedicated our lives to. Just by being a listener of this podcast, you are on this sex positive team who's trying to recreate culture out of thousands of years of sexual repression. So, you know, no pressure, no biggie. We're doing this together. But what we're trying to do in this episode is talk about men's sexuality and what this legacy has left men with today. So I think the first place to look at is the vilification of men's sexual desire. The positive thing is that our culture is starting to talk about sexual abuse and sexual assault. Just a few years ago, it was totally legal to rape your wife, and most sexual assault cases never even got talked about, let alone taken to court. And through feminism, through the sex positive movement, we've started to say that sex without consent is a crime, and that this is something we need to take seriously. The flip side to that is that men's sexuality, men's sexual desire and expression has started to become understood as predatory. And this puts a lot of pressure on men. How we haven't given them a map of how to express themselves sexually without being considered a predator. So that's one area we really need to look at. And we're not going to be able to fix all these conversations in this episode. We're just going to kind of lay out some of the issues so men don't feel so alone when they struggle with this, to open up the conversation so we can go deeper in further episodes, and to acknowledge what men are struggling with. So that's the first big one. Do you want to say anything about that, sweetie? Sweetie.
Yeah, I think that if you're a man or if you're a woman, notice how you interact with that piece. If you're a man, do you feel like you can't express your desire in many moments because of how it might be perceived? If you're a woman, have you had experiences where a man has expressed desire in a way that didn't feel good? And what would it look like? Or have you had experiences where a man has successfully expressed desire in a way that felt honoring and respectful and exciting to you?
Yeah, there's such a weird tension because women put so much effort into looking attractive and want to feel desirable. And we hear from women all the time that they want to feel desired. And yet we haven't come up with the ways for men to express that desire without being accused of being a predator. And this is a major, major conversation we need to have and resolve if we're going to move forward as a sex-positive culture where men and women are collaborative, right? Like, this whole war between the sexes needs to end. We need to move into a place where men and women support one another's healthy sexualities. Okay, so the second big thing we notice is that men are talked about as being brainless sex machines who are ready for sex at any moment, and it's just about getting a hard cock and thrusting it in a hole. And men's sexuality is that simple. That's it. And female sexuality is the complicated, mysterious force. What do you think this does to men? By the way, there's a dog barking in the background. We're just going for it. Sorry about it.
Yeah.
We live in the country. There's dogs around. Anyway.
Yeah, I hope you can still hear us. We just decided we're going to keep recording because we want to get this to you regardless. So thank you. Yeah, this idea that a hard cock is available immediately, always for men, and if it isn't, then it's a problem and is problematic and something to be embarrassed and feel shame about, is that puts enormous pressure on men all the time to be at the ready and ready to perform. And
And that pressure makes it less likely to get an erection, so it becomes this awful downward spiral for guys.
Which is totally not helpful for anyone. The erection going away during sex has to be seen as a natural part of the arousal cycle. Sometimes it's hard, sometimes it's soft, and it's all okay. It isn't a sign of your virility and your masculinity and your power.
Or even how turned on you are.
Yeah.
This is this thing that we have this simple equation of like, oh, men sees boobs, man gets hard. And then if a man is not hard in bed or has an erection that goes away a little bit, the female partner often feels undesirable and, oh, I'm not attractive enough. And then they reject sex. And again, this downward spiral ensues. And we need to take this pressure off of guys and off of the erection and off of the performance and respect men's genitals as not a simple light switch that's on or off, but a complicated system of blood flow and hormones.
And emotions.
Yeah, it's a big process to create an erection and maintain it. Like, that takes a lot of systems in the body. And sex can continue without an erection. That's the other piece of this, is we're taught that sex means a hard penis that goes in a hole. And of course, we advocate a much different model of sexuality that depends on a lot of full body stimulation, using your hands as an awesome sex tool that can get women off and can be used for the penis and create awesome hand job and erotic massage experiences. Oral sex needs to come into it, butt play. Like, there's so much more to our bodies than a hard penis and a hole to put it in. And again, this model of intercourse as central and primary comes from our sexually repressive past that only condoned reproductive intercourse. Which, what does that mean? That means a hard penis going into a hole, thrusting for a few minutes, ejaculating, and sex is done. We need to bury that model, put it to bed once and for all, and reclaim our full body sexuality and eroticism as something much more, and something much more celebratory and relaxed and easygoing and involving our entire bodies and all of our emotions, and just as an opportunity for two adults to play, or more if you'd like, for adults to play with one another's bodies and generously give one another pleasure. Like, what does that look like? And that takes a lot of performance anxiety off of the penis, which has been burdened with this pressure for far too long. Okay, enough said there.
Yeah, just remember that lesbians have so many orgasms. There are all these statistics about women in lesbian relationships have way more orgasms than straight women, which, you know, it's never a competition. But just be inspired by lesbian sex in your bed if you are feeling soft. For a minute, you can, not to say that it takes away your masculinity, but that you can queer your sex life and just get creative with all of the ways you can bring pleasure with a soft penis, and your penis will probably get hard again soon, and then you can get back to...
Let's do a whole episode on that.
I'm sure we have.
I think we did, but let's do more.
Okay.
Another issue men are fraught with is this idea that it's their responsibility to initiate sex. And then women are kind of the gatekeepers of whether or not sex will happen. And what this means is it sets men up to be the ones that are sexually rejected. And rejection hurts. In fMRI studies, functional MRI studies, they have found that rejection lights up the same parts of the brain as physical pain. So this is a real shame that we are doing this to guys, like setting themselves up for chronic rejection. And I think we need to share that load a little bit and reframe even how we think about rejection. We've talked before about the difference between rejection and refusal, with rejection being much more personal, and refusal is like, yeah, I'm just not available for that right now, but what about something else? How can we connect if I'm not in the mood for full-on sex, full-on intercourse? What can I do to connect with you and give you the intimacy and closeness and contact you're looking for? What do you think about this?
I think it's important for men to remember that when they are rejected or refused, that even if you intellectually understand that your lover is just tired and busy and isn't available, that it may still feel hurtful, and that is so. that you are hurt and that that's unfortunate.
And what do you do? You treat that like a wound, like you would if you got a cut? Like, how do you, what do you
I think it's,
do with that hurt?
I think that, yes, just acknowledge that that is what's happening. You do feel hurt instead of pretending that that isn't what happens, I think is the first thing. But then also knowing that then that every time that you are continuing to ask somebody if they want to have sex with you, however that looks for you, that it does take courage because there's always that risk of being rejected again. And some people kind of give up because it hurts so much and it's too many times of feeling hurt. And other people are okay to keep trying, but just, I don't know, just understand that this is a whole cycle of vulnerability and shame and hurt. And unfortunately, that is the landscape of vulnerability and excitement and passion. They are the sides of the emotions, of the experiences. And
but don't you think we also need to figure out a language of talking about sex and initiating sex in a way that doesn't create this hurt cycle? Like, it's one thing to say, like, yes, it exists, and then where do we go from there? We need to develop a new language for initiating sex where it's not just, like, grinding up your hard penis against your sleeping wife's buttocks and then her being like, yeah, not tonight, honey.
Yeah, absolutely. That's ideal that we can figure out another way of talking about it, that it doesn't hurt and that our needs are met. Absolutely. And I feel like that's what we are trying to encourage couples to do through conversation, through changing up what's possible in the sexual landscape so that you have options that feel exciting and interesting. But I just want to acknowledge that that whole cycle is there. And so if people are experiencing that, that
you're not alone.
Yeah.
That's a real thing.
Yeah.
Right. And it plays into this whole macho thing of, like, men aren't supposed to feel pain. They're not supposed to express pain and they're not supposed to feel vulnerable. Like, we're saying that it's okay to feel all those things.
They suck. But
it sucks, and especially when it comes to sex, like, it is vulnerable, and you are going to feel those things, and that doesn't make you less of a man.
I think that's the really important part. It doesn't make you less of a man. I think our culture is really obsessed with this idea that men just get to have sex whenever they want, and to not is a failing, and I think that is really problematic and hurtful to everyone. So please just know that you are still a strong, powerful man, even if somebody says they don't want to have sex with you once in a while.
And this other thing that men worry about that make them less of a man is their penis size. And our guest, the urologist, is definitely going to talk about this and what he's learned after seeing 200,000 penises.
Wow.
Yeah.
God, I've only seen a...
yeah, you're a few thousand. Psh.
Yeah.
He's one up to there. But this idea that penis size matters so much and men worry about this, is it big enough? Is it thick enough? Is it hard enough? Does it stay hard long enough? All of these questions about how their penis measures up really affects men's sense of masculinity. And this is influenced by pornography, where you don't see them taking all of the Viagra and other penis-affecting pills, where you don't see the video editing that makes their penis stay hard as long as the video editor wants them to, because they use loops. You know, they don't see all of these things, and so they're flooded with images of these hard cocks that just, you know, our pistons plunging into holes endlessly. And the truth is, we have never heard from a woman, and I think the urologist in his book says he's never heard from a woman who says, like, can you make my husband's penis longer or bigger? It's not what measures sexual fulfillment for women. It's not what women care about for the most part. Yes, there are preferences and how it fits in specific vaginas, but ultimately, there's more variation amongst the length and size of other parts of the body than there is around the penis. Like, most penises fall within a very normal range, and you are good enough, and it doesn't make you more or less of a man depending on how big your penis is. And I think, like, how many times do we have to say this? I don't know, but, like, where does this obsession come from? And how can we relieve men, again, of this pressure that their penis size is inadequate? It's heartbreaking.
It's a lot of personal and cultural energy that goes towards that feeling of upset and, yeah, doubt, longing for something else, wishing they could be something else. I mean, it very much parallels, I think, women's experiences of their own fat and body image. It's this, there's so much energy that goes into these.
When we make these cruel jokes all the time of, like, oh, he's driving a Hummer, must be making up for something. Oh, he must be inadequate in other areas if he has to do that. We make jokes about dick size all the time, and I think that's perpetuating this cruelty. We need to stop doing that.
Ideally, yeah. The culture is very obsessed with big dicks, meaning you are a strong, powerful man. Small dicks, meaning you are powerless.
And so I'm just going to get personal with you. In your years of doing erotic massage, did you see any correlation between size and pleasure?
No, it makes absolutely no difference to the man how much pleasure they can experience in their body. Absolutely none.
Right.
Absolutely none.
All right.
I wasn't having intercourse with them. I was just using my hands on them, so I'm speaking to their pleasure.
But I think this is the idea a lot of men have, is like, it makes them a better lover, and we know that that's a myth. And it makes their pleasure more intense, and we know that's a myth. And so what are we left with? We're left with genitals of all varieties and all sizes and shapes, just like our faces and our nose have all different varieties and sizes and shapes. Right. And they're all capable of experiencing and giving pleasure, and the amount of pleasure that is correlated has nothing to do with size, but more about attitude and how you use them and what you bring to the experience. So how do we relieve this pressure from men? I don't know, but we are on a team.
So the answer there is that people just have to accept their penis size, whatever it is. It's small, medium, large.
Yeah.
This is what you got given. Yes. Choose to love it, because it's not going to change.
And there's a hundreds of millions of dollar industry that is dedicated to making men feel inadequate and selling them pills and pumps and potions and surgeries even to make their dicks bigger. And we need to acknowledge that that's a money-making industry and that there is no medical intervention to make penises bigger that is successful. And we'll have our urologist talk more about that. Okay.
Yeah, we say focus on being more sexually skilled and confident, so you can not worry so much about your penis size, and you just have to accept what your penis size is.
And the final, well, it's not final, I'm sure there's many more, and we want to hear from you about what you experience as men, but the final thing we want to talk about today is this idea that the ejaculatory, penis-focused orgasm is the final destination for men's pleasure. Men are sold so short on what their bodies are capable of. They're denied information about male multiple orgasms, non-ejaculatory orgasms, prostate orgasms. It's as if men are set up to be grateful to have any sex at all and have any orgasms at all, and they should never ask for more. This frustrates the hell out of me. I feel like men are capable, and we've seen men and have guided men into these incredible states of arousal that are far beyond a simple ejaculatory orgasm. So we know it's possible for men, and yet there's very little conversation out in culture about how to give men way more pleasure, give them access to these incredible states of arousal and orgasmic intensity. And we want to change that. We want to give men the key to this portal that takes them way beyond what they've been doing since they were kids, and masturbating furiously and ejaculating as quickly as possible, because that's the model many men bring into their sex lives for the rest of their life. And it's like they're staying on the ground floor when there's an incredible tower of sexual possibility just beyond that door.
But I think what that requires to go up the elevator, as it were, is an understanding that there's more to know. You don't know it all, and there's more to learn. And I think that that is something that takes courage in and of itself. In a culture that tells men that you're supposed to have it all together, and to want to learn more about sex might mean maybe you're not good at sex. That's not what it means. Mm. It means I'm just curious and I want to learn more. But I think that for some people, the first answer is, I know everything about sex. Everything's going fine. I've had no complaints. I've had no complaints. I mean, this is often what I hear from very young men from 20s, kind of, you know, where it's like there's still a lot of perhaps insecurity, or, you know, they've just done it a little bit and then I don't know, they're still kind of figuring it out. And so I think as you get older, you get a little bit more mature and you're like, well, I probably have more to learn.
Yeah.
There's probably more, you know, so I think that it takes courage and bravery to be like, all right, I want to learn more. What else is there?
And I love hearing from men who have enrolled in our courses and then write to us and they're like, holy shit, it's like I got this instruction manual that I never knew existed. And thank you so much. And they get all excited. It's that same energy as like guys who take on fixing up a motorcycle in their garage or learning how to build a house or training for a sport. Like men actually, when they give themselves permission, love learning and mastering new skills. And women do too, of course, but there's this masculine energy of like, I am rocking this and I am learning and I'm leveling up. And it's that video game thing of like, do the dungeon just unlocked and you beat the master guy and whatever. But it's so exciting when men, whether that's in their own bodies and discovering the multiple orgasm state or the prostate orgasms that's like giving them more pleasure than they ever knew possible, or in giving their partner pleasure and they learn the hand skills and the fingering skills, and all of a sudden they have their wife writhing on their fingers and are so excited and they're hearing their orgasms, and it's so exciting for guys and they get all lit up. But you're right, they have to first give themselves permission to be like, there is more out there and I'm going to seek out that instruction manual. Our online courses are a great place to start. But once they seek out information, they kind of take on sex as a hobby and become that sex master. And there's this pride of being the most sexually confident, enlightened guy of their all of their guy friends, and kind of have this swagger to them. And I love taking men to that state where they all of a sudden feel confident and knowledgeable about sex and they're literate about sex, instead of feeling like they have all these questions and they're too embarrassed to ask. And that's part of what we're here for, is you can ask us anything. And I try to get back to every email as quickly as I can, but any question that's been burning on your brain or any skill you've been wanting to learn, we are here to give you that information in a friendly,
reliable
way. Yes. So we are in the process of preparing for an interview with this prominent urologist who is ready to answer your questions. So if you have any questions about male sexual health, sexual pleasure, anything penis related, email us soon, because this is coming up, at beintouch@pleasuremechanics.com. Or if there's other things you want to share about your experience of male sexuality, what it's like to be a man right now at this moment in culture, we really want to hear from you. We are huge advocates for male sexuality, which surprises some people because we're two women in a relationship, but we both absolutely love men and are rooting for men and want men to be as turned on and powerful as they possibly can for their own good and so they can be good partners for other women or other men.
Yeah.
Go men.
Go. So any burning questions you've had about your penis, let us know. Ooh, that sounds like STI.
It could be a urinary tract infection. Any questions, penis related or not?
Yeah.
Send them
our way. Or sex related. Yeah, we're here for you. We really are.
And we will dive into more topics around male sexuality. Let us know what you want covered. You can find a complete podcast archive over at pleasuremechanics.com. And of course, our online courses. If you haven't checked out the Foreplay Mastery course, do it. It's amazing. It's our best-selling course for a reason. And we get so many emails from couples who have tapped into this course and transformed their sex life. And that just makes our day so happy, is when we get these victory emails. And we can celebrate with you as you unlock new levels of pleasure and connection and intimacy. It's what we're here for. Use the code Speaking of Sex for 20% off the course of your choice. Be in touch with us. We are rooting for you all
the way.
Aww. I'm going to use the L word. We love you.
Aww.
Be in touch. I'm Chris.
I'm Charlotte.
We are the Pleasure Mechanics.
Wishing you a lifetime of pleasure.